Hey, this is Father Voskin, a priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, a podcast about life and love, about spirituality, and well, just about everything. In fact, we look at the very fabric of our being through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy, polished up in a new manner, and we call that Armedoxy. So we invite you to kick back right now, turn up the volume as we get ready to take this step. This is brought to you by the good folks at epostle.net, apostolic evangelism for an electronic and, dare we say, expanding universe. So if you're ready, let's take the next step. I don't know about that expanding part. I'm still out on that. Ever since I saw those pictures, I was sharing that with you last week. Remember, we were talking about how there might be geometries, how there might be a finite universe out there. Well, anyway, they played with my mind a little bit. So I don't know whether we're expanding, we're contracting. The important thing is we're together, right? That's it. We're going to be together for the next few minutes, sharing some ideas and hopefully expanding our minds. And if we, in fact, we do contract them, well, we hope it's in a positive direction. Anyway, you know I am excited today. I'm always excited whenever we get a chance to be together and share these few moments of the next step. Today, I'm also excited because in the studio is a good friend of mine, Gregory Baylarian. He's going to join us in a few minutes for a small interview, shall we call it, interview or talk. Anyway, just always exciting whenever he's around. I wanted to start off today by first of all thanking so many of you who've sent email greetings, messages. I really, truly appreciate it. And you know, I was sharing with you that last week about the power of prayer. It is like so energizing and you can't believe it. It's almost like this little electricity that's out there and you don't know how to harness it, but somehow it is being channeled. It is coming to you. And it's a very interesting phenomena if you think about it, because prayer is being sent out by so many people. And they're in different corners of the world, different corners of the planet. And somehow it gathers together. When we talk about the electromagnetic charges that keep the universe in sync, you know, that the idea that we are revolving around planets, around suns, around stars, and then centers of galaxies, and then the universe. I mean, what is it? You can't see it, but it is bringing everybody together. It is that force, that energy that keeps us all in sync and united. And I gotta tell you, I felt that way. I'm very, extremely humbled. I don't know. These past few weeks have been just, you know, we say that all the time. You know, somebody gives you a compliment and you say, I'm humbled. And it's kind of like one of those words you throw out there, you know, because you don't want to seem like, hey, look at me. But in this sense, I can't think of another word. I am so humbled from the people, the amount of energy, the amount of thoughts that are coming my way. And I'm just so grateful. I've got to tell you, I came to this realization maybe about 1 or 2 weeks ago that every day, yes, is certainly a blessing. You wake up every morning and it is certainly a blessing. And that's not the realization I came to. I hope that most of my life I've lived that way. But the realization was that the biggest blessings, and this is what I found, are all around us, are the people, are the relationships, are the love. You know, I've shared with you this idea that we were once in the forest with a teacher, and this teacher got upset because some of the kids were yelling and screaming. He says, quiet, quiet, listen, listen all around you, listen. And we were all of a sudden, we became very quiet and we listened and we heard, you know, the birds far away. We heard the water trickling. We heard waterfall. We heard small little animals. We heard the rustling of the trees. And it occurred to me that, you know, also part of that reality was us. That, yes, if we were going to yell or if we were going to be quiet, obviously you don't want to disturb all that's around you. But equally as important is you being in that moment. And I've shared this with you on many occasions, returning back to the church and where we're at as far as this podcast and what we're doing and everything. It's very important that when we talk about Armenian Orthodoxy, when we talk about the ancients, that we include ourselves in the mix. No one being greater than than the other, but all coming together and combining to make the whole. And this is so important that when we do talk about Armenian Orthodoxy, I know many times people have come up to me and said, well, you know, you got to be talking about the saints and everything. Absolutely. These are people that were in the past, right? But we are also equally part of that entirety. And that's why we call this Armadoxy, sort of a new evolution of where Armenian Orthodoxy can go. Armadoxy is this idea that let's strip away the institution, let's strip away all of the trappings that are there and really focus in on what is the message. Isn't the message about love? Isn't the message about peace? I mean, when you talk about Jesus Christ being incarnate, and the scriptures say that it was love that was incarnate, what are you talking about? You're talking about that power of love being able to fuse even through the material reality that we're in, right? Incarnation, taking form. Love taking form. When you talk about, well, you know, I know it's not popular right now. We're right in the middle of June, and we just finished this. The summer solstice just came and went. Go back to the winter solstice, right? You talk about Christmas, and we talk about peace on earth, goodwill to man. Well, what is that peace? Is it just a word? Or is it truly a reality that we need to aim for? When you put your hand over your heart and you say, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. We do this here in this country. I know we have so many people all around, but our pledge is to the United States of America and for the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, liberty and justice for all. You know, you look around and you say, hey, where is that liberty? You know, you've got certainly difficulties on the streets. You've got justice issues where injustice so many times prevails. But it is that dream for which you pledge. The flag is a symbol of what it can be. And when we talk about religion in the same way, you need to be able to talk about what can be. Those dreams are so important that we keep dreaming those dreams, the reality that peace may take place. You know, we talk about how is peace going to, right now we're looking at the situation escalating in Libya. We're talking about Afghanistan. We're looking at Iraq. Just this morning, three more young men were shot down right in Iraq. And it's almost the forgotten war, right? It's been 10 years. Who cares? It's out there. No, these are lives. These are human lives that are going. And we talk about peace only in terms of how many people can we kill. It doesn't make sense. Christ, when he came, he says, he who lives by the sword will die by the sword, right? Well, he's not saying that, okay, if you're going to pick up the sword, right, you're going to get killed. What he's saying is an axiom, a truth, a reality. That if you want to live by the sword, that's the only condition you're going to know. That's the only vocabulary you're going to have. And so you're going to die by the sword. So let's change the vocabulary. Let's talk about love. Let's talk about peace, about opportunities where we can really go in the direction and find that true peace. And it's not just a peace that's in the heart. It is a reality peace, a peace that can be all around us. You've got to dream about that. Because the dreaming is the first step of it becoming reality. You've got to visualize it. You've got to imagine it. And this is true of whatever. If it's a goal in your life, if it's your complete health, if it's a relationship that has gone soured, you've got to dream about it. You've got to visualize that it can be. Then what happens after a dream? Any dream. You open your eyes, and at that point, that dream starts evolving. It becomes into a reality, right? The only way to actualize a dream is first you need to wake up. So you open your eyes, and then you put it into action. And it is only in that way that dream can become reality, is when you open your eyes, right? Any dream. A dream's over when you open your eyes, but it's at that point that it can start taking a life of its own. And the more far-fetched it is from what we perceive as reality, then we start defining it in terms of miracles. Well, the miracles are all around us, and the miracles keep happening. It's just us who our senses have become so dull because of, well, all the garbage that's being thrown at us. And all of a sudden, we stop perceiving those miracles. Now, I wanted to share that with you as a prelude. Next week, I'm going to be having a podcast that's going to be talking exclusively about these miracles. Because, you know, I went through this incredible month of my life, and I shared some thoughts with you last week. I want to share with you next week as well, because I have received some beautiful emails that are so touching, that have really, really jarred me. And I want to talk about the real miracles that happen all around us. And it's going to surprise you, because I'm not talking about somebody having cancer and then just standing up. I'm not talking about somebody being confined to a wheelchair and then standing up and picking up his pallet and walking. I'm going to talk about some real miracles, the change of soul, the change of heart. And I want to invite you next week to join us for that. Well, I don't mean to do it as a teaser. I know you're going to be here anyway. It's just that, you know, I'm excited. I think that when we talk about Armodoxy, I'm so excited, because every layer that we start peeling off, every fold that we start removing and straightening out, we start seeing that the puzzle is really in front of us and the pieces are all there. It's just up to us to put them together. And one by one, those pieces are not only are we putting them there, they're falling into place. And the idea of miracles being something more than just this idea that, okay, hey, they're the blind man sees, but the idea that each of us possesses this opportunity to become part of that miracle and to have a miracle in our lives. It excites me, because it's right there. So join us next week. For right now, for this week, I'm excited to introduce a guest to you. We're going to be talking in just a few minutes with Gregory Bellaria, and you've heard his name many times on this podcast. You've certainly seen his work on our website, on In His Shoes. He is an artist who we worked with on our forgiveness program, the 7x7. Actually, it evolved right in his studio, where we came up with that beautiful logo of the triple sevens. And we, on many occasions, with my work with the youth, I've invited him to come and speak to the youth candidly about the opportunities that are out there to really think outside of the box. Think of yourself as this human who has this incredible potential. I certainly believe in the work that he does, and it is a pleasure to call him. It's an honor to call him a friend. We've had many occasions to work together, and in just a few minutes, we're going to be sharing some ideas. But as every week, we kick off today with a song of the day. I've picked out a special one. It is off of an album called Echo of the Mountains by Yerish Manukyan, and it does feature Gregory playing on that album as well, and he does play. We'll talk to him about that as well during our interview. This is a song called Armenian Girls Dance, and we will put a link to this album as well on our show notes, and then we'll go right into our interview. How about that? Enjoy. Thank you. We're back here in the studio. I am so excited because today with me is Gregory Baylarian of artistic fame of many sorts, and I'm so happy that he's with me. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you.
So glad you could make it over here, and we're going to be sharing some ideas. I just shared with our listeners that this song that we just heard off of the Yerish Manukyan album, Echo of the Mountains, you are on that. You are actually one of the players, so I want to get into some of the musical talent that you got there, as well as the artistic, and sort of just like flow today. I know that we've been flowing lately. Gregory came and visited a few weeks ago while we were up in the hospital. We looked at some incredible activity taking place in these construction sites. So today on our show notes, you will definitely get a chance to see what we saw too. We're going to have some pictures up there too, so make sure you do check them out. Anyway, Gregory, welcome here. Listened to this song, and let's begin with that, because I understand that you play duduk on there, but duduk is more than something you play. You have a passion for that. Can we start off over there? Tell us about the song, your passions.
Sure. Well, I should specify that I played Dom Duduk on the album. The duduk is an instrument, for some listeners may not know, is one of the oldest woodwind instruments, and it's from Armenia specifically. It's one of those instruments that really is born from the blood of Armenians, the mountains of Armenia, and it's very unique and beautiful in that... In fact, it's quoted by Brian Eno as being the instrument that has the sound closest to the human heart. And what I call an instrument that depicts the sound of ancient blues. There's no other instrument that sounds like it. The musicality of the instrument is unique. It's truly a unique experience. And to play the duduk, although it's only an octave and a half, it's very diverse in range due to the subtleties of tone that can be produced from the instrument. It's played with a double reed. It's a handmade instrument. And the dom duduk and duduk play in unison. So you always usually have two duduk players playing together. The main or soloist duduk player, and then what's called the dom player, which would be the resonating meditative tone. And what's interesting about the dom duduk is that you learn a breathing technique called circular breathing. And what that means is you learn to inhale through your nose and exhale through your mouth continuously, so that you produce a sound that doesn't stop throughout the duration of a song. So you never will hear a dom player exhale and then inhale to continue playing music. And you learn to inhale through your nose and exhale through your mouth continuously. And you create a perfect pitch. You have to learn how to hold a steady tone. And that steady tone is what the lead or soloist duduk player will riff off of, or basically lose himself into a sort of, you know, what I perceive as a ecstatic meditative state of consciousness. And so the dom player, as you refine your technique, learns to hold a perfect pitch that doesn't fluctuate, even though you're inhaling and exhaling. So you learn to really control muscles in the mouth and the throat and the stomach, the whole upper body. And you have to really enter a state of consciousness and to hold a perfect pitch for the lead dom player to ride on.
So it's a complete, it's a almost holistic in a sense, to be able to play a dom here. You're using all of your senses, all your faculties. Sounds very, you have to be quite disciplined to get this down.
It takes, just to be able to learn how to do circular breathing with a duduk, because a duduk is not an instrument that's like a piano that you can make a sound just by tapping on the keys. Just to learn how to make the proper sound takes a lot of practice, and to learn how to do circular breathing takes even on top of that more. And then to learn how to do circular breathing and create a tone with a duduk that doesn't fluctuate. There's nothing worse to a lead duduk player than a dom player whose tone is varying, like when you hear a perfect pitch tone, now imagine if that sound was, right? Mm-hmm. If it fluctuates, it breaks the meditation. It breaks the foundation. So the Dham is to play the Dham properly. It's really difficult, and but it's a beautiful meditation.
Go back to this idea of the sound of the human heart. That was interesting. Is that what you referred to?
That's right.
The Dham. Okay, so in meditation, you have the sound of the universe. You have this idea that there is this underlying thing. What is this idea of the sound of the human heart? Is that something that duduk players understand? Is that part of the Dham?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's also stated that... and I don't want this to sound prejudiced, but I will say that because I haven't heard a non-Armenian recreate that sound as authentically as an Armenian can do it, an Armenian duduk. There are a few great duduk players out there that are not Armenian, and they certainly can play the instrument in an incredibly technically accurate way. But there is a sound that comes from an instrument when an Armenian plays it, and I don't know if it's because they were raised from the ground up in the culture. Mm-hmm. It may be like, you know, someone trying to play rock and roll that's from Yugoslavia. I don't know. But there is a sound from the instrument when played by an Armenian that is unique and unparalleled. And for me, I remember the first time I heard, I was like maybe 19 years old, and a relative sent me a duduk album. I didn't even know the instrument existed. It's a pretty esoteric instrument and very much about just Armenian culture, although it has found its way into many movie soundtracks. Mm-hmm. But the first time I heard it, it did shake me up. Definitely my eyes watered up. It touches the heart in a way that... I think I can say I haven't found another form of music that can touch the soul, the heart, is intensively, is so much that I have experienced people who can't listen to it because they feel it evokes too much emotion to them. And it tells you something about the power of the sound.
Definitely in many of the songs. I mean, we've talked about this many times here on this podcast, the idea of Armidoxy going back to the time of creation, really this whole idea that here's this idea that you got these Armenians that are sitting out there in this landlocked little country, this nation, which has absolutely no means to provide really for itself, It's like this rocky area over there and everything. And you've got no military plan, you've got no great military forces, and yet they've survived and thrived, you know. Yeah. And it's like something deeper than just the resources that they have around them. And so when you say this about like finding that tone, that Armenians find that tone, it's an interesting idea that kind of connects us with something deeper and something... that we need to all connect to, that we need to figure out. So I appreciate that. Many of our listeners know your name more than you. I'm really happy that you made the time to come out today. We've talked through the years about Gregory Bailarian, this artist who has worked with us on so many projects, specifically the 777 project. We've done we've done seminars on forgiveness, on many things. And by all rights, you know, your artwork is incredible. I know people who have seen it and everything. How does this all come together for you? I mean, you talk about your musical talents. You talk about this, the artistic talents. Where do you see yourself? Who are you as a person?
Who am I?
At this artwork? Yeah,
good questions.
Yeah, well, that's what
really
we talk
good.
About here.
Those are the best questions, definitely. Well... My fascinate how the sound of a duduk came to me, my interest in music, my interest in art, in who I am or what I strive to be. These are questions I do reconsider. I just came back from 7 days, you know, off the grid, going through the deserts, Monument Valley, Grand Canyon camping, you know, away from electricity and civilization, away, just tapped into nature. had a lot of time to think about these questions again.
And revisit. Knowing you, you probably did it in a small minibus, right?
That's right. Yeah. VW pop top. There you know, go. The only way to do it, okay. Camping out under the stars and with my wife and my little girl. And to go to that question that you pose, everything. I've always been interested in going beyond the flesh and blood. I've certainly always been interested in spiritual dialogues. Musically, the sound of the duduk for me is profound meditation. You know, I've gone beyond specifically the name of Christ, the name of Buddha, the name of the Quran, you know, whatever the path is, I'm always curious. And for me, in whatever I do, I discovered, you know, that what I need to do and what's most important for me is to stay authentic, be true to my heart, and be passionate about what I do in my life, professionally, personally. And I found that that is my spiritual dynamic, and that's my living dynamic. And that's been my objective, and to see how's the quality of life when you live that way. Mm-hmm. The duduk, of course, is for me a very meditative experience, and I was very much drawn to that. The breathing elements of the instrument. I love drums, the percussive element of that instrument, all rhythmical and primordial to the heart. And in my artwork, it's perhaps no different in that I am interested in the active pursuit of consciousness and exploring the evolution of my own self and how I can contribute to the immediacy of my environment, the greater scale of my community, and then the grandest scale of the world that I live in. And how can I contribute positively to those things through my own awareness and exploration and education of growth in my heart, my soul, in the dance of living, through materials, processes, music, art.
You reminded me about the drums, and certainly, you know, we've done several drum circles, and you were one that introduced that to us, to me, and to the small Inner Shoes circle that we do have, and I do want to put a link on our show notes, but I think hearing you talk right now, I know that many of our listeners, I think many people, just in general, have this desire to connect spiritually to something bigger than themselves, but are trapped by their surroundings. They're trapped by, well, you got a mortgage payment to make, you got to get your kids through school and everything. And somehow you've been able to break those boundaries that we put on ourselves. And I think that this is what I'm fascinated, and I want to maybe share with our listeners too. I mean, how do you find that balance to be able to bring in that art, to connect to something so beautiful as life in the very real surroundings that you have, you know?
That's an incredible question that anybody who is drawn to their heart and dreams to do something confronts, because in this world, in the modern world, it's not easy to live doing what you love. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody can relate to that. Most people can relate to that. Perhaps I can say that I was raised in a way that, in my case, I did not have economic restraints, in the sense that my parents were doing pretty well for themselves. So growing up as a child, I knew what it was like to live comfortably. Mm-hmm. And then when I got out of college, and I'd always been in love with creating things, making what you would call art, you know, the process of creating. When I got out of college, I realized, how am I going to live making art? How am I going to support myself? And in my case, as a person who had a pretty good sense of what money could buy, because I see that most people are driven by the functionality and need for money to get what they want. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, having a pretty good sense of the comforts that money could buy, I said, well, am I willing to make sacrifices of what money can buy for what I love? And I'm not saying that you have to, but at that time in my life, in my early 20s, I didn't know any other way. And what I eventually did was I committed to figure out how to live a life with as low overhead as possible, to not compromise in the sense that I wanted to pursue and figure out how to live by making art. And I had to let go of everything that I was used to. You know, I lived in 300 square foot apartment. I let go of all the things that money brought. And I, because maybe it was because I was raised in an environment in which I knew what money could have. Perhaps in some way I wasn't so driven for the money. I was driven to live by the truth of my heart. And that's not an easy thing to do. And I cannot maybe present that as what everyone should do, but I can certainly say for me, having lived that way, I'd say for about 20 years now, for me it's the best choice I ever made, because money can come and go, but when you're in the point of doing what you love, there's a certain happiness. And I'm not talking about the happiness you get when you get your new iPhone or your fancy car, whatever that you think, you know, you can get from cash. It's a happiness that's, for me, I found to be of more value. And till this day, I have to struggle with the mind, as we all do, in overcoming our perceptions of what we think we need or want. And they're usually masked, I found, in my case, in fear. Even this trip I was just describing to you, where I spent 7 days seeing some of the most extraordinary visual landscapes I've ever seen in my life. And I've traveled quite a bit to some pretty exotic places in the world. You know, right here in the backyard of the United States, you know, Grand Canyon, Monument Valley, Lake Powell, you know, Bryce Canyon, and the roads to get to those places, it's extraordinary. If you can believe it, I decided to make that trip in 12 hours. Up until the moment I left, 6 hours or so before, I was not going to go because I had my own list of excuses. Why it wasn't the right time, it wasn't economic, there wasn't the right, you know, responsibilities, I had too much, the list goes on. And what I discovered, as I'm always rediscovering for myself, is I'm always trying to stop the barriers that I create in my perceptions of what I think is possible and what I'm capable of doing. What I've learned is I was able to make that trip. Nothing changed in the sense of where I would have been if I had stayed back in my studio. I came home to my studio, it was the same. If I had stayed in my studio, even in the 7 days of chores, doing the work, whatever my work would have been, my process, instead I have an extraordinary labyrinth of memories now with my family that can never be replaced and will stay with me forever. Mm-hmm. But I almost sabotaged that experience because I thought I had good reason not to go. And I think that's the moral of the story of as an artist, and maybe to live a good life, is to really be observant of our thoughts and try not to restrict ourselves from what's possible. And I've realized that I don't have to necessarily make sacrifices. For example, living as an artist today, I don't necessarily have those economic restraints that I thought I would have.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that I didn't go through hard times, you know, but we go through hard times no matter what decisions you make. Just because you choose the job for the money doesn't mean you're not going to have hard times there either. So going back to the core question, for me, in my case, my experiment is I want to see what life is like living it authentically and passionately. You know, that's why I have these symbols tattooed on my wrist, so I can remember that as often as possible. You know, true love. You know,
Talk about that, because I did want to go there in your art, and the symbol, which is on all of your artwork. I was in your studio several years ago, and I can't get this image out of my head, because I was so impressed by it. It was like almost supernatural. I don't want to use that word because people think it's some hokey, but if I didn't see it, I probably wouldn't believe it. And you had some music. I think it was a Bach concerto going on or something. And I've seen people who draw to the music. Mm. What I witnessed that day, the music was, you were drawing that music. It was a very strange phenomena. Mm. I don't know. And I know you get into that whole, into your art, body, soul, and mind. It's not,
right.
I mean, your body is driving that brush, but it's your soul, your mind is there, and everything. And it's all consuming when you do your artwork. And so can we talk a little bit about your artwork, about the truth, the love, the passion that you have, the symbol of the heart, you know?
That's okay. That's a very I like where you're going.
Well, that's where I'm going.
I like to say that, you know, because nobody knows the outcome of these concepts until you try them, and in my case, you know, I decided to see what would the quality of life be for me if I followed what I truly loved. And what does that mean? And it opens a huge Pandora's box. You know, what is true love? How do you know what those things are? Because, you know, your perception is, can be easily, you know, skewed by just life. And for me, the notion of being in the flow, trusting the flow, I would say is an aspect or a dynamic to achieve more clarity in understanding true love. You see, a big problem might be, well, that sounds great, but what if you don't know what you want to do? Mm-hmm. Right? Clarity in itself is an aspect. Perception of reality is an aspect. And so, how do you know what's true? How do you know what you love? And so, in comes the meditative component.
To bring about clarity?
Yes.
Okay.
So that in my process of evolving as a human being, I must incorporate in some way a meditative process that helps to see my reality more clearly. And it was explained to me by a Buddhist monk a long time ago in a metaphoric way, and I like it, and I'm going to use it, and I'm going to say it. It's not mine, but it's what was shared to me. And that meditation is like polishing a mirror. And that when you look at yourself in the mirror, and let's say it's an old dirty mirror, you know, that you see that reflection. And meditation is the process of polishing that mirror and allowing you to see yourself more clearly. The more clear that mirror is, the more clearly you see yourself. So in my case, I happen to have, once again, some people may call it, there's kismet, there's destiny, there's a lot of words to call it. But in my, you know, when I was 18, I connected with a true teacher of an ancient practice, Shaolin Kung Fu, a real authentic protocol. Mm-hmm. And I ended up studying under this master for many years. And one of the fundamental meditations that was shown to me has become a central aspect for me in my life and is invoked into everything that I do artistically. And essentially, it's a very simple method of practicing to be in the moment, mm-hmm. while in a state of action, learning to respond from your intuition or your higher mind, not from your lower mind, not from your judgment, not from your criticism. Now, your teacher explains this to you on day one, and it's a lifelong process. And so what I began to do is incorporate this technique, not just in the traditional exercises that were shown to me, mm-hmm. but I learned and developed my way of allowing the process of creating my artwork to be that meditation as well. So my line drawings became an exercise for me to learn to surrender to the moment as the pen would touch the paper, to be in a state of action, staying present where that tip of that pen is touching that paper, and not to drift from there, because I could float away and think about lunch, or I could float away and think about a woman, or there's many things that could distract us. Mm-hmm. And it's a practice to be present while in a state of awareness, right? Mm-hmm. Action, while being in a state of action, motion, being guided by your higher mind. What is the higher mind? These are questions I had to address and discover, and that was the process. And so what you saw was an exercise that derives itself perhaps from ancient meditational Shaolin teachings. Wow. And I can incorporate them into contemporary art as a way for me to keep my art, my spirituality, and my humanity in check, so that when I'm drawing, I'm exercising. When I'm creating a work of art, I'm attempting the practice of developing myself as a human being with the hope that the result of the art, the manifestation of that art, isn't just a decorative thing that will hang on a wall, mm-hmm. because there's nothing worse for me to think that my contribution to society would be decorating places for people who can afford expensive stuff. It's not what my goal is. I'm looking to figure out how I can contribute through the things I create. And my hope is, and my belief is, that if I can interject into the things I'm making these principles that we're talking about, that in some way their physical manifestation can be a reflection of these ideas, whether they're conscious or subconscious, to the viewer, you know, who experiences them.
Before we get in, before we continue right now, Susie's looking at me. She's telling me we've got to take a little break. So let's go back down to earth. Susie, make this announcement. We'll be right back in just a couple seconds.
Before getting back to the next step with Father Vazquez, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. We thank you for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. We are now in the fourth year of broadcasting, and we're proud to tell you that this voice of Armadoxy is being heard by a worldwide audience. The next step is entering homes, workplaces, and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion to a waiting world. We appreciate your responses to this message and always look forward to your words of encouragement. You can address your comments to feedback@epostle.net or via our website at epostle.net. Every week consistently for the past 4 years, we have brought the next step to you as a gift. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations either weekly, monthly, or annually. You may also mail a check to Armenian Church Youth Ministry Center to 632 West Stalker Street, Glendale, California 91202. Please be assured that your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, please take a moment to tell your friends about the next step. We're on iTunes, Blueberry, as well as on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter. We're excited about this ministry, and we invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the next step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, you, Susie. Yes, very appropriate. And yes, I'm glad you did interrupt us. It was it's a very important reminder to bring us back down to reality that somebody's got to pay these bills. And really appreciate all of you who do listen and do support us. And do please consider being a regular contributor to The Next Step. Well, in the studio, we have Gregory Baylarian. We've been talking about his artwork. Right now, I want to focus in on a specific one, a specific piece. Just a couple of years ago, I think it was, you did this piece called Rise. Right. It was a resurrection piece on Easter morning. And we'll definitely put that up on our show notes as well, a picture of it. Tell me a little bit about this. This is an interesting... We have the image right here, right now. Tell me about this. What went through your head as far as the expression of resurrection in this one?
Well, going back to what I just described, mm-hmm. in terms of my process, mm-hmm. this might become interesting or perhaps difficult to comprehend. Because it may sound like a contradiction, or it may sound supernatural, as you mentioned earlier. My process of meditation that was shown to me, that I incorporate into my creative process, does not involve, let's say, intellectualization. Mm-hmm. Means I don't sit down and prepare myself with using my mind to go, okay, I'm going to make a piece that does this, tells this story, has this symbolism in it. I don't work that way.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't mean that it is not loaded with content, but this is where it might become complex. It means that that content comes, I believe, from... I'll go out on a ledger and say a divine consciousness that I'm asking and making myself available to be a conduit for. See, I do believe that I am, my interest is to be of service. And part of that process is allowing myself to be available for whatever comes down the pipeline, so to speak. And I believe that I learned that this capacity to be available in this way came to me through this understanding of meditation. It is how advanced monks were able to move or not move and be and do certain things that seemed supernatural. Mm-hmm. Because they could not depend on their mind to be where they needed to be. Or how could their hands be where they, you know, one of the techniques that we learned how to tap into this ability is where an advanced student does nothing. Now remember, this is not an art about fighting, okay? Mm-hmm. A lot of people have to understand that Kung Fu was not designed for military use, okay? It was born from monks. It's sees life as sacred. I want to preface that because it's not about learning how to kick butt, so to speak.
Well, and that's what Western society has made it.
Right, sure. A lot of movies it allows it to be where boys can fantasize about being the king of the block, you know, with able to overpower their... adversaries, and you know, really, it's not about that at all. Nonetheless, it allows you to, you know, one of the techniques would be an advanced student will be basically throwing a barrage of punches at you, and all you are entitled to do is block them. Okay, no reaction, no offensive reaction, simply block. Now, when things are coming at you, you know, super fast.
Yeah.
You don't have time to think about what you need to do. You have to learn to trust. You have to learn to allow your hands to flow intuitively to where they need to be. And if you try to think about where you think they need to be, you'll be fooled, because any good fighter knows how to fool you by communicating with a shoulder, perhaps, to make you think a punch is going to come from there, but it won't. So there's many tricks. And so you cannot depend, so we blindfold ourselves. Okay, so imagine this. you're taught to learn how to block punches blindfolded. Explain that to me from a rational point of view.
Yeah.
It's part of the practice. It's real. And it is a method to learn how to connect, ironically, to this consciousness without having to depend on your lower mind. So going back to Rise, okay? Yeah. Rise is built that way as well. It's not depending on the lower mind to be constructed. It's allowing itself to be born through this process that I'm doing my best to describe to you.
It's fascinating.
When I look at it, I can say this. The colors are inspired from... I lived in Italy for 2 years. I've spent many years traveling throughout Europe. One of the things I did was go to as many cathedrals and churches as I could. For the architecture, for the art. I mean, some of the best art you're going to find is actually in churches. I find it very interesting that churches really helped artists, right? Because there's a real collaboration there. I mean, the Sistine Chapel, what do you see? All that beauty comes from that relationship between artists and the church. So the colors are coming from the stained glass. I mean, stained glass is extraordinary. I mean, the colors, the luminosity of light passing through glass. I really searched to figure out how can I create that phosphorescent, translucent magic that is generated from the color of stained glass. But I'm going to do it on watercolor paper. So there's that. Of course, behind Christ is the cosmos in blue with the stars, right? So now what I'm doing is I'm sharing to you what I'm my own interpretation of my own artwork. Right. It's solely and purely subjective.
Which we shouldn't be doing anyway. I guess that...
Well, you know, it's interesting. A lot of artists like to say, look at it and see what you get from it, right? See what your story tells. And it's funny to watch people when I'm having a gallery exhibition. I learned earlier on that everybody has their own point of view. Even the artist. I remember our show, the gallery owner said, we have space for 22 pieces. I had 23. I had to remove one. On the day of... So what do you do? Which is the weakest piece? Maybe what's the weakest piece that's least likely to sell? So even I had to make a judgment call about my own work. In this case, the gallery owner put it in my hands to make that call, not her. So the day of the show, that morning, she says, there's one more spot, if you can believe it. I found another spot for that 23rd piece. So we went in the back and we hung it about an hour before the opening. Guess which was the first piece to sell? The one that I had removed. So I learned even I cannot make the call about my own work. And then throughout any exhibition I ever have, people are not, as you know, in this world, there are certain people that are not shy to elicit their opinion without it being asked for. It's just the way it is. And so people will come up to you in a show and say, oh, not I think, this is your best piece. Hmm. You know, people, just their feeling, their experience. Okay. The next person will come up and say, you know what? They'll point to the same piece and say, I believe this is your weakest piece. So it was so funny. I would see the same piece of artwork get, you know, the highest praise and the lowest praise. And it gave me insight into the way we're all perceiving reality and the roots of our perception and how we even see color, how people feel about color and where did they get those ideas about color, shape, line, texture, all that good stuff.
Absolutely, the perception. One of the ideas that you bring up about the divine and I forgot the exact word that you use, the divine realm, did you say, or the divine? You were talking about something about in your artwork about the different states, and it's interesting because I make a point a lot of times in our liturgy, the Armenian Church liturgy. It's often criticized that we don't understand it. It's done in a classical language and everything, and one of the arguments is let's bring the liturgy down to the people. And my argument has been always against that, It's mm-hmm. at some point we need to rise and kind of fly with the angels. We need to be up there. So instead of like bringing God back down to earth, let's raise ourselves so that we can see a bigger consciousness, have a better consciousness of reality around us, and kind of fly with the angels. Now, this is the week of Independence Day. This country has been founded on this principle that we have the right, and the pursuit of happiness is so important. And 2 minutes ago, I heard you say it specifically, the happiness of having an iPhone. And I happen to know that beyond all of this, this stuff, pie in the sky stuff, you are an avid user of technology. And I thought maybe Absolutely. We'd wrap it up a little bit today, talking about iPhones, technology, and where you are. Because you talk about the divine, and yet you are very grounded in a lot of technology. I just thought if you'd want to share a little bit about that.
Sure. I am extremely excited about technology. I love technology. I incorporate technology into every aspect of my life, including the creative process. I remember 10 years ago when shortly after moving out to California, you know, we'd go on road trips. We didn't have phones in our pocket. We certainly didn't have internet access. I mean, that's not that long ago. It was a very organic time.
I think dinosaurs were on the planet.
Yeah, that's right.
When there was no internet, yeah.
And fast forward today, I have a lot of electronic-based tools in my life, and perhaps the iPhone is my most revered. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how much I love it. Now, that being said, I do believe that we have to adapt. There's always a possibility. Oh, that, you know, what if we don't have electricity in our life, you know? I mean, it's ironic. 100 years ago, we all could survive without electricity. Today, if you pull the plug on this country, everything will stop. Yeah. From business, accounting, you know, money flow,
everything.
Refrigeration, food, everything, everything. I've often heard the debate, especially in photography, but I've seen it in many aspects of let's say modes of career or in life. You know, the embrace and the rejection of technology. You know, I often see it. I happen to be very fortunate. In around 11 years ago, I was offered to experiment with the first pro digital camera called a Nikon D1. Now, little did I know, once again, part of that, you know, life journey, 20 years ago in college, I was part of a team exploring a beta release of Photoshop before it was on the market. Mm. I was in college and they were saying, what can this be used for? Little did I know that it would become an integral aspect of my life. And I do remember when I was given the D1 to test and experiment with, every photographer I knew in town, from the local guy to the top ad campaign shooter, was looking at this camera like they would never embrace it. There was not one, and I really mean, I don't mean that in an exaggerated way, I really do mean, there was not one photographer I knew that would hand over their Hasselblad or their 35mm, whatever, medium format, nothing, out of their cold hands. There's no way. Hmm. 10 years later, not one photographer that I know shoots on film unless they're doing some kind of fun little artsy project.
Yeah.
But they're not doing it professionally. It's very rare. And there is an issue of the mind having to embrace change, understanding the value of what these tools can provide. And that's all that they are. They're just tools. In my case, I happen to love the tools for what they can do. You know, I spent 7 days in nature that iPhone was still in my pocket. Yeah. Ironically, I got a better reception in Monument Valley with my bus perched on a cliff, sitting by a fire. I had four bars.
Wow.
I'm here living in the middle of West LA. I got one bar in my apartment. And I thought that was pretty funny that I had better reception. Okay, I only texted maybe two people just to say, hey, guess what? I'm sitting by a fire in the middle of one of the most ancient, you know, structures on Earth. And it's kind of exciting that I can say hello. And I was able to check in for 5 minutes into my life and just wow. connect to the things I needed to connect to. And then I was off the grid again. And I choose that option than not having that option. I really do. I choose having the workflow of my, you know, pro digital equipment. You know, I'm a avid Apple user. You know, I have been since the beginning. And these things are, you know, they're just tools. My wife's brother is a violin maker. And to this day, you know, his main tool is a chisel.
Wow.
And you know, he's old school, and that's a beautiful thing.
It's an art.
It is. And I believe the iPhone is an art too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not in the position to promote it or deny it. You know, I think people can accept it if they want, and if they don't want to, they don't have to. So I think perhaps the element of technology that I want to add is that I see technology as a reflection of our growth of consciousness. And it allows us to do things that could not be done before. In my artwork, I'm able to utilize technology to integrate materials and processes and merge them together in ways that just could not be done before. So it allows me to create new expressions that were not able to be experienced in the past. And I do believe that part of the ambition of an artist or protocol of an artist is to expand consciousness. And we do that by using the language of form, color, line, whatever the dimension is you're working with, and to recreate those elements in a way that we haven't seen before. And by doing that, we allow a person, when they experience that art, to see something new. And when you see something new, there's an experience or a transformation that happens in the mind, in the brain, in the chemistry. And so technology for me ultimately is allowing me to merge different mediums together in a way that is giving me that ability to help nurture consciousness to expand.
So via evolution of technology, you are actually creating. It's an interesting combination of evolution and creation coming together.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. That's very well said.
This is why we're deep.
You know? Yeah,
Let me make a disclaimer. We are not supported or funded by AT&T, but if they want to send a check our way, we'll be happy to take it. And one day I will share about my feelings of Apple having grown up in Cupertino, but that's another story. Kind of accounts for this. Gregory, it is such a pleasure to be with you. And I know that today's interview, I don't know if we should call it an interview, because, you know, Greg and I, we get together many times throughout the year, and we have these conversations, which start off at Starbucks and end up somewhere else. And we've always talked about having a microphone between us, right?
That's true.
And so today we've got it.
There
and
it is.
If you wouldn't mind, I know we're going to get some reaction to this. And maybe if you could come back and share some more ideas, we could kind of expound on some of the different things. But I so much appreciate you being with us today. You've given us so much really to think about, to share. And I I want to thank you on behalf of our listeners, too, for making the time and being with us. We're going to put up some links on our show notes, and I do encourage you to do check out those links. You'll be able to see some of his work, see some of the work that we've done together, whether it's the drum circles, the 7x77 project. Those will all be up there. I want to give you a chance for a parting shot, and then we'll look forward to having you back with us shortly.
Thanks so much for inviting me over.
And thank you for your friendship. I started off today's podcast by talking about just the many wishes and emails that I've received over the last couple weeks since my stay in the hospital. Gregory was one of those that actually came by, and we would sit on a little ledge overlooking like six stories of the Kaiser Permanente building. It was incredible. Now that's
going to
be, we're going to leave that for the next time. Okay. Anyway, thank you very much. Give my love to the family, and we look forward to hearing from you soon.
Thanks so much, Father Voskin.
Take care. Well, I want to thank you for joining us for this session of The Next Step and remind you that you could stay connected to us throughout the week at all kinds of websites, and, well, we have such a web presence. You could follow us on the mothership. That is at inissues.org. Find out all the projects that are taking place. Join us at epostle.net, where you will find this podcast as well as every podcast we have done since the beginning of time. Yes, they are all archived over there. Epostle.net, that it's apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. And of course, we do have a Facebook presence. We have a YouTube presence, and you can follow us on Twitter. And by the way, YouTube, speaking of YouTube, we just added a new channel along with YouTube In His Shoes. We now have in YouTube Armadoxy, where you can find a series of videos that we've just produced from the beginning of this year. And what are we, about halfway through the year? So about 25, 26 of them, you could find them. And this will be continuing. So these are actual videos, all in about 10 to 15 minutes in length, with teachings of Armadoxy. So do join us there as well. Listen, check out today's show notes for all of the links that we talked about today, and to get in touch with Greg as well. For the wonderful team who put today's podcast together, for Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, Ani with her bubbles, suspiciously absent, but guaranteed to come back next week. This is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience, not valid with any other offer.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.